Welcome.
Let's do this.
All right. Yes, this is actually, I think, maybe a coincidence, but it's an interesting amalgamation, I think, of people who have different experience with different types of custody. So quick history and background. I've spent the past 8 years building different types of self-custody products, really focused on individuals and helping people be their own bank. Obi's interesting because he has exchange experience. He is very familiar with having to do the traditional centralized custody in the way that a lot of the big companies that have probably helped onboard many of you into this space. And now Caitlin is working on a new type of custody in the sense of like the legal framework around it. And then coming back around full circle, making things even more complicated, Obi's working on, the best way I could describe it is, you know, a federated custodial model that will be an interesting blend of what we've all been doing for the past few years. So, you know, getting into that, I guess, you know, Caitlin, when you're looking at the type of custodial models and the quote-unquote Bitcoin banks that people are onboarding with these days, you know, what have you found to be wrong there? You know, and what is your approach? How is it different? Why is it important to be trying out new things when it comes to like trusted third-party custody?
Well, I think all of us would agree, not your keys, not your coins. I say that all the time, and yet am building a third-party custodian. How is that not a contradiction? It has to do with both the legal structure, as you said, which is different, I'll get to that quickly in a second, but also the fact that there are certain parties, namely fiduciaries, who have to segregate the asset management from the custody of the assets. That's been true in the United States since 1940, and that includes any registered investment advisor, any investment company, like a mutual fund manager, corporate treasurers, pension funds, et cetera, follow the same rules as best practice. So that's really the target customer base. And I'll be like Jesse Powell, who says, even though he built a custodian, don't custody your assets with us. But the difference for Custodia is the Wyoming legal structure, which tries to reflect Satoshi's vision. And I think a lot of you know who Trace Mayer is. He helped set it up in the first place. His vision was the legal system could end up being an attack vector on your Bitcoin. And Bitcoin doesn't care what the legal system is, but for you to close off that attack vector on your Bitcoin where a judge might someday make you give up your private key, whether it's in a divorce settlement or whether it's in a, you know, political terrible situation like Eric was just talking about potentially happening someday, you'd rather have it set up such that you own legal title. And so here's the punchline. In Wyoming, the special purpose depository institutions don't take legal title to your Bitcoin. It's the law of bailment, where if you choose a bailment structure, what it means is just like in a valet parking garage or a coat check, you're not turning over legal title to your Bitcoin to the custodian. And so if your garage goes bankrupt while your car is parked there, you can just go get your key, turn it on, and drive away. That's the concept.
Gotcha. Yeah, so Obi, you've got that exchange experience. I assume you probably saw a lot of things that might be nightmare fuel for the rest of us. You know, if we got to peek under the hood there. And so, you know, you're not doing that again. You're actually doing something very different. Is it fair to call this, you know, a community banking model, or you're trying to make it easier for there to be many more custodians? So, you know, hopefully at a much more distributed and decentralized level. I guess the point being that while I've always been a self-custody advocate, I think we're all self-custody advocates.
Yes.
We also realize that there's complexity, there's responsibility, and for any number of different reasons, be they legal, personal, you know, people just don't have the time to devote to it, there is a convenience factor and efficiency, of course, to be gained from having a trusted third party, or maybe in your case, a semi-trusted party to help with that. So yeah, How would you, you know, best describe, you know, what the goals and architectures of FETI are?
Yeah, so it would be good to talk about this previous world I was in as context. So I ran a Bitcoin exchange. It was the UK's longest running Bitcoin exchange. And we had hundreds of thousands of clients. And we were Bitcoin only. And unlike many other exchanges in the space, we really wanted people to self-custody. And we weren't just paying lip service to it. So for many years, we would talk, almost beg our customers to self-custody. And I would take time to talk to key customers from different demographics, different backgrounds, and get to know them. And they are now friends, lifelong friends, many of these. And I remember very clearly one day, after many years of trying, one of our key, she was in her, you know, really streetwise woman in her mid-60s, Jewish background. She remembered from her parents, from the war, why it was important to self-custody, hold assets. And she said, look, I really understand Bitcoin. I understand what it's needed. I understand why I should self-custody. But Obi, I know you've been trying for a year or two, but the reality is I trust you more than I trust myself.
Sure.
And when I heard that, sort of my heart sort of sank.
Yeah.
And but then I asked a really, really important follow-up question, which is, okay, who do you trust more than you trust me, than me? And she thought about it for a moment, and she goes, well, I asked my son, and he's the one who suggested that I use the exchange. So if he said I should go to Wibble Wobble Exchange, I would have gone to there. So essentially, I trust my friends and family, my community, more than I trust you.
Yeah.
And that was the seed that, you know, if I'm going to take a Sherlock Holmesism, I put in my mind palace and just left it there. Sometime later, I was lucky to meet my co-founders, and one of them was the inventor of the FetiMint protocol. And this is a mechanism to take community custody of your money and also of your data or any other information that is of value that you want to be able to take custody of. And it allows communities to take custody of that, but be able to access it, use it, and add functionality to it to rival the functionality and usage experience of a third party exchange. So in the gamut, you have first party custody, which another way of putting it is do-it-yourself custody. It's great if you have your own car and you can fix it and build it yourself. That's always the best. But not many people can do first-party custody, although self-custody on Bitcoin is much less difficult than self-custody and building your own car, just to be clear. And then on the other extreme, you have third-party custody, and this is stranger custody. You're giving your money to someone who's incentivized to take your money. And maybe, if they're a curly-haired guy in the Bahamas, that may not end well.
Right.
So, and then in the middle now, you have this new concept, which is federated community custody. And it's naturally decentralized, because instead of having third-party custody naturally centralizes, you always see it. You see it with Mt. Gox. Over time, it became the dominant exchange worldwide, doing the vast majority of volume. Then it left. Then you had Poloniex that started to grow, and now more recently you have things like Binance. It always centralizes. And so a world at scale with billions of people using Bitcoin, where there's three or four third party exchanges custodying everybody's money, yep, is a nightmare that will make George Orwell turn in his grave.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, that's really why I've focused on trying to make self-custody easier for so long, is it is this battle against the systemic risk. You get too much concentration, too much money, too much power, and then inevitably, you know, either through malfeasance or simple negligence, catastrophe hits, and thousands, if not millions, of people are adversely affected, and in many cases, you know, may get turned off from the whole space, and then we have to go through another cycle. And this is, I think, a perennial question is, you know, is this an indefinite thing, or can we break the cycle? And this sort of hybrid solution, you know, may in fact be able to give people the convenience without creating that systemic risk. And kind of looking at it from a different perspective, though, you know, Caitlin, you're still very focused on the traditional finance side of things. I think, you know, bridging these two worlds.
Right.
It sounds like FETI is more agnostic in that it could, your community bank could have bridges to traditional finance,
yep.
or it could be a pure Bitcoin-only play.
Yep.
But you know, I guess why do we even still need to talk to these traditional finance folks?
I sometimes wonder that same question myself. But the answer is that the companies in this sector still need to pay their vendors in dollars. It's really that simple. You could probably get away with paying your employees. Most employees would probably prefer to be paid in Bitcoin companies in particular, would prefer to be paid in Bitcoin. We just heard Mayor Suarez of Miami talk about how he's taking his salary in Bitcoin, right? So you can pay your people in Bitcoin, but not your rent, not your, certainly not your payroll taxes, certainly not not your tax taxes to the government, right? So there still does have to be connectivity. And unfortunately, one of the sad realities of the way the United States is set up is that in order to be a business, you have to have a bank account. Why? Because under the tax laws, you have to remit your payroll taxes to the IRS through your bank. Okay, and so this is why, unfortunately, the authoritarian-oriented politicians started to realize about a decade ago that the banking system could be used for social engineering. And it's frickin' scary. And there was a big pushback against it. Operation Choke Point 1.0 ended up expanding. It started with the payday lenders and ended up expanding to 30 different industries. And it's back.
Well, Obi, you know, when you're envisioning the future of federated mints and community banks, do you expect that these quote unquote bankers will be interfacing with the traditional system? Like, do you expect that we'll see more people become, you know, sovereign quote unquote banks, but not in the sense that they're, you know, regulated companies, or do you think it's still going to be more of a corporate, like, for-profit and possibly regulated thing? It's just an open question, and you're providing a solution, and people can implement it however they want.
So it's the latter. We're providing a solution, and people can implement it in any way they want. And it's far more than your quote-unquote bank. It's this custody solution for both your money and your data and your digital lives. What we're seeing, though, is there's, from the feedback that we're getting, is there are different parts of the world. There are parts of the world where they want access to the services that we take for granted here, but it's just not economically viable for people to provide it to them, so they have no access, or at swingingly high fees, they have access. So it's economically very, very negative for them to have. Now, those parts of the world, they often, we say, in the global south, and that's because often they are in the global south, that represents more than half the world. So we are in the minority in that context. The next context, and they just need options, and they cannot use the options that we're discussing. So community banking is a way for them to use the technology, the most fundamental technology of community, and use that to empower themselves when combined with the new freedom technologies like Bitcoin, like Lightning, and like Fediment. And so they can be their own community custodian of their money, their data, and their digital lives. The second group are people who live in parts of the world which have actually quite sophisticated financial systems, but they are under the yoke of authoritarian regimes or dictatorships. So they have banking, but if they were to use it, they may be arrested and they may be imprisoned or so on. So they cannot trust their banking options.
Right.
Again, that is that section of the world. It's a different carving of the world. It's also more than half the world. So again, we are in the edge case of the edge case of a place where we can generally trust our banking options, and it's economically, we produce enough revenue to be economically viable to provide competition and reasonable services. So in this edge case of the edge case of the world, here it makes sense to interface with banking providers and so on, and that is possible. People can extend Fediments with any functionality they want, connect to existing tax systems, existing compliance systems, if they wish to do that. And for example, if there's the communities can be not just villages and towns and and religious institutions and families, but they can also be corporations and organizations. They are groupings of people, and they have the benefit to take control of their money.
Really any group of people who has some sort of incentive to coordinate with each other and maybe in a semi-trusted way. Though, Caitlin, I'm sure you have an interesting perspective based upon your ongoing battles on the traditional side of things. Would it be fair to say that if you win your war, you will actually make it easier for some people to follow in your footsteps and make that particular type of Bitcoin banking more open? You're lowering the bar.
Yes. Here's the history of the U.S. banking system in a nutshell. States always chartered banks until 1863, when Lincoln-era, Civil War-era legislation created a federal banking charter. The chartering authorities were equal, so states and federally chartered banks were on a par. Then the Fed got created in 1913, and then the FDIC in 1933. And the quick and dirty is the Fed and the FDIC were created as utilities. The Fed runs the payment system. The FDIC runs the insurance company for the banking system. Okay, those were available to all banks, regardless of whether they were federally or state chartered, until about 10 years ago, when suddenly Washington, D.C. decided that had the political power to start saying, well, we like this industry, right? It's Operation Choke Point, but we don't like that one. And then the Fed started saying, well, okay, we don't have to give accounts, we don't want to give accounts to all state chartered banks anymore. The law says the Federal Reserve shall provide services to all eligible depository institutions. And that's the fight. So the question that you're asking is spot on. If it is determined that the law means what it says, then there will be more opportunity for Bitcoin companies and really financial technology companies as a whole to get access to the Fed itself. That is what the legislation, the Monetary Control Act of 1980, says, and there's extensive legislative history. For those who are interested, a law professor, Julie Hill, has just released a law review article about the legislative history and why Congress made it clear that every eligible depository institution shall get services from the Federal Reserve.
Well, I dare say that this may play into what Eric was closing the last discussion with, where you may be that virus that's getting inside of the traditional system and able to open it up for the rest of us, right? So best of luck. Any other closing thoughts before we get kicked off the stage? You're both optimistic, obviously, on the path that you're working on. They're different, but I think they will be usable as platforms for millions, if not billions, of people.
Yeah, I would remind people, and we said it at the beginning, Caitlin said it, that if you can do it, you should try to self-custody, if you can do it. But if you can't, we need to find solutions, and we've discussed some solutions here, to take people away from third-party custody where you don't have guarantees to areas where you have more control of your money and power. And in so doing that, we can level up this society here and level up humanity.
And thank you to all the engineers who are working on this project. The engineers are the most important people in this
Absolutely.
Ecosystem. Kudos to you for working on trying to solve it.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
We'll exit that way.
Thank you.
Bitcoiners, welcome back to Bitcoin 2023. This is the Bitcoin Magazine Live Desk, sponsored by Marathon. I am joined once again by Ben Askren, Chris Cyborg, and Kenny Florian. I'm going to kick it over to you first, Ben. There was a lot of talk about different types of custody models with this. What are your thoughts on self-custody for Bitcoin, and how important is it?
I think it's vital, and I think it's kind of what scares a lot of normal people. But I was kind of ranting to you guys is responsibility for your life and the things that are important in your life is one of the best things you can do, whether it's your health or your money. Why do you want to trust a bank with your money? And we're kind of spoiled in America because we haven't seen a lot of bank runs, but there have been plenty of other countries where you put your money in your bank, you go to get it, and it's not there, right? So if you take your Bitcoin, you put it in your wallet, and you put it in a safe spot, put your seed word somewhere. That's your responsibility. Take some responsibility for your life.
Definitely. I'll kick it over to you next, Chris. Do fighters understand Bitcoin better because of the amount of personal responsibility that goes into training and working your body and your mind going into a fight? Do you think that fighters understand Bitcoin better because of that?
No, it's really important to keep your keys safe and you keep for you, for yourself, you know, have been individual. I think it's really important, like he said, when the COVID time happened, I went to the bank, I want to take money, don't have money there. So it's really scary about this, you know, and this is, I think this is because it's safe to have any Bitcoin and learn to keep it safe, you know.
Yeah, definitely. Kenny, going over to you, Caitlin was talking about the legal system can be an attack on your Bitcoin, but she was also referring to leaving your Bitcoin at a certified bank and kind of using the legal system to protect yourself and say that, like, when you park your car in a parking garage, just because that you someone takes the keys or a valet takes your keys doesn't mean that they have the right and title and custody of your car. Yes. It seems kind of like conflating the two things of, you know, your self-custody practices versus leaving with a third-party custodian. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, you know, I think that responsibility and freedom go hand in hand, right? Like, you can't want freedom and then not be responsible for what you have. And I think the only time you really own Bitcoin is if you have it in self-custody. And I think that's the magic of it. Why would you give that up? And I think that, I don't know, yeah, you could rely on the law to protect you and things like that. But, you know, laws get changed all the time. Things get manipulated all the time. Things get argued all the time where there's little loopholes. So, I think you're much better off having it in self-custody and holding yourself. Hopefully there's other options. You know, maybe it's not for everybody, but self-custody is kind of what I recommend to people.
Definitely. Going back to you, Ben, Obi had a story about an elder woman that basically understood the importance of Bitcoin and self-custody, but she was more trusting of an exchange. Obviously,
we've seen
a slew of exchanges collapse. She was referring to Obi's exchange that, like, I trust him or you more than I trust myself.
Yes.
I think you need to hammer home the point, the self-custody aspect.
Rage on it. That's it. Why would you trust yourself? Like, this is your life. This is no one. I always tell them when I'm talking to my athletes, I'm like, I am here. I am your coach. I am your resource. But this is your thing. You're here because you want to get better and you want to make the best thing for yourself. I'm just here to help you take control of your life. Take control of your training. This is for you.
Did you ever help Dave Portnoy? I know he was on the desk with me last year and he was saying he was leaving on the exchange. Did you ever help him with that?
He needed a lot of help.
So you did help him?
No, I never helped him.
Oh, come on.
It's much easier if someone else has the responsibility. You can just blame them instead of yourself. Yes. You're like, it was Ben's fault.
Yes. He's going to blame you. All right, we've got to get back to the Nakamoto stage. Thank you for sticking with us. Remember to smash the like button and hit the subscribe button. Stick with us. We'll be right back after this break.
Thank you, Miami, for the last 3 years in this amazing city. The whole world shut down, but Miami welcomed us with open arms. We want to show Bitcoin to the whole world. We are taking the conference on the road to set the stage for Bitcoin in a new city. Nashville. Bitcoin 2024 is coming to Nashville in Tennessee, a city that is known as a music and freedom city. Bitcoin 2024 in Nashville from July 25th to 27th.